Welcome back to another Future Sox podcast. Clinton Cole, your host here. And we've got a special guest via Skype down in Birmingham. It is the voice of the Barons. It's Kurt Bloom. Kurt joined me at the beginning of the season to kind of preview things. And now here we are, mid-July, 3 months later. And quite a bit's happened, Kurt. So first of all, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I want to make you aware of this. There might be a connection issue. You've blacked out just once or twice, just in case we don't hear each other. But otherwise, that being said, it's good to reconnect with you. Anytime we can promote our product, great opportunity, great vehicle for us. So happy to do it.
Yeah. So before we got started, we were talking about the lack of games you guys are having down there because of the hurricane.
It's been really strange, and even strange once we get back here to Birmingham. I think it's even more hard to conceive. Basically, what happened is what was Tropical Storm Barry for those geographically challenged, and those who are not familiar, it actually hit on the west part of New Orleans and then made its way up through Arkansas and then what would be the western part of Tennessee. And that's where we were playing. So when we got back here, and I'm off, there's nothing to do, and it's beautiful, bright, sunny, and hot. And so even people here are saying, what are you talking about? But if you go back and look, and just east of Memphis is where we were, that's where the problem is, and it hasn't stopped raining there for about 4 or 5 days. So I think the right call was made. But I am concerned there's no on-off switch, as you guys know, as everybody knows, there's no on-off switch. Prior to those three games in Jackson, the team had played their best baseball, not only this year, but literally since the championship season of 2013.
Let me ask you something about Jackson real quick. I know everyone does their best, but I was trying to watch a game down there, and their camera is not the greatest of things. Have you seen this, the video feed of that?
Well, I don't need to, and basically, a couple of things. One, it is the smallest market in AA. There's 40,000 people in Jackson, Tennessee. So they, you know, should they have even gotten a franchise? You got to ask that. Two, Clinton, is there's a real good chance, although no one in New Orleans is going to wind up with them in 1 to 2 years. New Orleans is going to Wichita. New Orleans will be an open market, and we think that the Southern League will cover a team, right? And ultimately, what it comes down to, anything in life, in terms of baseball, I should say, it comes down to the word resources, and they don't have resources. That's it. They don't generate money, and in order to generate it, you need to have attendance, you need to have population. So where the Barons are drawing 6,000 fans a night, they're drawing less than 600, and that's yeah. So anything that does or doesn't happen, you know, it doesn't surprise me. And you have to, well, we're blessed. You know, we've got resources. We have the fans. We have number one attendance. And so in that case, we have the resources to not rain out a game. And we have the resources to go get a good video production crew and, you know, to do things the right way. I think that's the easiest and safest way to put it.
I think all the affiliates of the White Sox are definitely very, very fortunate for where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, what they draw all the way from, you know, from Charlotte all the way down to Kannapolis and Great Falls. I mean, all those teams are, they've got a good base and you got a good product.
I would think when you measure the quality of city, quality of ballpark, the White Sox are in certainly the top five in all of minor league baseball. I mean, Charlotte is obviously the number one draw in all of baseball, over 1 million people. We're the number one draw in the Southern League. Winston has done a nice job since getting their park, and Kannapolis will be getting a new ballpark. So I think the White Sox, and plus you get the geography of just floating guys around the state of North Carolina, except coming over to Alabama. But I think the White Sox have done a nice job, and they're very, very pleased with where they stand.
Talking with Kurt Bloom, your voice of the Barons.
No, Kurt Barons is fine. I've been there long enough.
We can do Kurt Barons? All right, we'll do Kurt Barons, too.
We're talking about Blooms.
let's get to the on-field product. There's several topics I want to hit, but first, I mean, we got to start with Louis Robert. I mean, this guy is, You got to see him here. It looks like 56 games this year in Birmingham, and now we've seen what he's done in Charlotte. It's just unbelievable. But we talked about him at the beginning of the year, and does he do anything that surprises you anymore?
Oh, absolutely not. No. And you know, I told the story even before the first pitch was delivered, and I interviewed Luis when he got to Birmingham and asked him about the one at bat that introduced himself to me and introduced himself to what I thought I would see. He's facing Derek Holland in spring training, and Derek Holland's been a big league guy for quite some time and is known for his curveball. So this is a spring training game out in the middle of Scottsdale. You don't know if you're coming or going, who's playing or whatever it is. So anyways, Holland throws him curveball number one, big 12-6 bender. And Luis almost came out of his cleats, swinging strike one. And then he throws him another one, same exact, big, big swing. He tornadoes himself halfway down to China. So now he's got two strikes. I'm sitting there in the booth going, I wonder, does he throw him one more? And he did. And Robert smacked it into left center field for a triple. And I'm like, wow, that was a big time at bat. And I remember the buzz that was in the press box in Scottsdale. Everybody said the same thing. It was a moment, again, that may be lost. Who's looking at one at bat? He said a lot. So when he got to Birmingham after destroying the Carolina League, I was expecting it, and we got it. The way that I put it, because we had the Barons had Eloy the year before. And Eloy, by the way, has now become one of those icons like Madonna, like Michael. You only need one name. So when you say Eloy, you know, you don't need his last name. So anyways, Eloy at the same age, in the same stage, was just slightly more offensively polished. Eloy did not have an 0-for-10, 0-for-11. Robert has a little bit to go. He will get tired, and the at-bats will become long, and he'll go through a small mini slump. The tool set is so good, it won't last forever. But the rest of his skill set of running the bases and playing the outfield, he is superior to Eloy Jimenez at this stage as well. So that's the excitement that White Sox fans and people who follow this organization, they have to look forward to, is really Eloy part two with speed and defense already built in. And that's pretty damn exciting.
All right, let me ask you this. I've watched my fair share of games of his down in Birmingham, of course, and now with Charlotte, but I've seen some people, I don't know if they're right or wrong or whatever it is, looking at his swing, wondering about, you know, his ability to take the ball opposite field. Now, there's nobody else who's seen more of Luis Robert than yourself, or, you know, obviously than the team itself. But what do you think about his ability to use all fields in the batter's box?
I go back to my Eloy comparison, and that was so impressive. Now, let's go back to Eloy's very first at bat ever as a Birmingham Baron. Third pitch he ever saw at this level, he hit as a right-handed hitter. So you knew automatically, I can use the whole field. Robert's home runs, when he gets pull happy, his home runs are going to left and left center field for sure. There are base hits to right and right center, not as frequently as Eloy. That's why I said Eloy is at the same stage, at the same age, above and slightly above Robert in terms of his offensive prowess. Robert is not far behind, and that would be one of the areas where if you threw Eloy, let's say, 10 straight pitches on the outside, he immediately is going to go to right field and be very happy. I think watching Luis Robert, he's going to try to pull the majority of those pitches, not all, but the majority. Then he'll set in there and he'll go, I better adjust, and then boom, he'll hit the ball to right field.
All right, that's definitely something for us to watch for as he progresses in Charlotte. Let's talk about some of the outfielders. Whether it be Luis Gonzalez, Blake Rutherford, I mean, these type of guys that, you know, everyone off to a slow start this year, but then now, you know, they've started to come around a little bit. Blake Rutherford's had a good year, or a good last few weeks, and then Gavin Sheets as well. I talked to Gavin a couple weeks ago, and, you know, he kind of had a slow start, but then since June, he's really turned it on. So some of these slow starts, but these guys are seemingly turning the corner.
The slow start was something that I don't know who anticipated, who didn't. I know that it played with their minds as well as their bodies, because here were guys that were successful last year all season. They were successful for the same manager. They moved up one level, and I don't think April and May that they could have had lower batting averages, and they could have, I don't want to say performed poorly, but certainly shockingly didn't come close to being the type of players that they were the previous year, 2018. We started seeing signs. It was interesting. Both Sheets and Rutherford the exact same day, May 31st, last of May, all through June, they got hot together. Luis Gonzalez has been a little bit more consistent, so he didn't have to go on this wild rampage. Then again, he has not gotten as hot as those other two guys have gotten, but he hasn't been as cold as those other two guys were. So it has been, it was something that Gavin told me when Sheets did a post-game show early. He said, we're the type of team that when we all hit, we're going to punish some people and we're going to go on a streak where we can win 15 out of 20. And he wasn't too far off. When one guy hit, the whole lineup started getting better. Now, the unknown factor in April, May, and then the first week of June was the fact that there was no Nick Madrigal. And now Nick slides in the second week of June, and you've got a guy instantly that brings everybody up and makes everybody better. So you have Sheets, Rutherford, Luis Gonzalez, underrated Tyquan Forbes, all starting to get acclimated, just feeling better about themselves. Then you add in Madrigal. Now you got something that was cooking, and that has allowed the Barons to get off to this very encouraging start in the second half.
What about Luis Basabe? I mean, he missed quite a bit of time, and now he's 35 games into his season. So what have you seen, I guess? I mean, obviously when someone has been injured for that amount of time, you know, it takes a little while to come back to it. But what are your thoughts on Luis?
It's just a shame. Yeah. As he has played. And when it comes to a pure skill set, his five tools are just about as good as Luis Robert. Not as good, but close. He could play center probably better than any of the outfielders we mentioned. His arm, well, we never saw a Adolfo, so I would put his arm as the best. His speed, a tick, a shy below Booker, and maybe, and certainly in the same class as Robert. Okay. That's what kind of skill set, rather, that he has. But we have all, including him, have been robbed because of an injury during spring training, which was the broken hamate. And then the second one, he's pulled his quad twice. And so we have been completely robbed. He looks lost at home plate right now. And you're hoping that the next day is the day that he turns it on, starts to show that skill set, because on the field, there's nothing he can't do. He can run. He could hit long home runs. He could play center. He could throw. He can hit for average. But it doesn't do any good if he's on the IL. Okay, so that's the easiest way to sum it up. And I think it would have certainly added to the White Sox depth. It would have added to the excitement of the Barons to have him in the lineup, and I certainly think he's capable, and I know he's capable of making a difference and doing some things within a game. He could also bunt, but none of those tools do you any good when you played 30 out of a possible 60 to 65 to 70 games. And even the games he's playing Clinton, you could tell he's not at full speed. He's playing as if he's hoping not to get hurt.
It's too bad. I think that coming into this year, and correct me if I'm wrong, outside of Luis Robert, I felt like Basabe was maybe the most advanced, you know, like you kind of said about the tools, but I thought that he was the most advanced of the outfielders of Rutherford and Gonzalez and Booker and all these guys in terms of, you know, getting to Charlotte and maybe getting a chance at the end of this year, but those injuries.
Yeah, and I'm not going to correct you because you're not wrong. And again, it doesn't matter what skill set and what kind of tools you bring. If you're just not in that lineup, you're not doing anything. You know, it's like being a 5 o'clock hitter during BP. You're hitting balls all over the wall, but come seven o'clock, 7:05, you're doing nothing. So in his case, it's just you White Sox fans, people who follow this organization, they're getting robbed of a guy who certainly, if the top tier of outfielders did not materialize, or you had to trade one of them to get a frontline pitcher, Basabe is a guy who's got an incredible set. He can do things, and we've seen nothing, unfortunately. Just barely anything at all. He's holding on. He's trying to stay positive. And again, you know, when you talk about the legs, I mean, there's a guy, his game is built on speed. So that hurts even more that twice he has pulled his quad and really slowed him down. And because you don't want it to happen, there's extra time on the IL and you're almost sitting there waiting for a spot that opens. But back to your point, you're not wrong because he is that talented. And it's unfortunate that, again, we've seen less than 50% of him in action. Well, Nick's different because he started in June. He became a Baron in June. I don't think, unless the Barons completely fall out of a race, and unless Charlotte is still in, and that scenario is possible, I'm going to guess right now that Madrigal finishes the year in Birmingham and then competes for a spot next year in Charlotte. I don't think there's a need right now to push him specifically at his position up to Charlotte. Not at the moment. They've got infielders up there. Danny Mendick is holding down one of the spots, a guy who was, of course, with the Barons the previous year. They got big leaguer Ryan Goins. They've got surplus of infielders. So that's not that much of a need. And I'm not saying that there's much. When you look at Madrigal's batting average, you know, how much more can he do? That being said, you want to make sure, because he's only seen, this would be a Gordon Beckham type thing. You see 32, 35 games of double A and then you get promoted. It's not enough. You got to see more. And in his case, again, he has helped the Barons get to a situation where they're one game out of first place. So you let that ride. You let that ride throughout the month of July and into August. And then you evaluate. Okay, come August 15th, are the Barons still in the race? Is Charlotte competing for a spot? Could Nick make the difference and help Charlotte get into the postseason? If you don't check all those boxes, Clinton, I think he stays with Birmingham, as mentioned, goes to spring training next year, competes for a Charlotte spot, probably opening day second baseman in Charlotte for 2020. And then anything after that, you just determine by what happens injury-wise, and you determine what happens playing-wise from the big leagues to AAA.
All right, let's talk about pitching real quick. You know, two guys that off to, you know, we're pitching well, but, you know, it had those injuries, Jimmy Lambert, of course, and then Bernardo Flores. Flores making his way back now. I mean, those two guys seem to be, you know, two of the top guys, but then you got to look at some of these other guys. I mean, outside of those two guys, what have been your thoughts on the pitching staff here?
Well, I'm going to start with Lambert and Flores. I think that's a great start. beginning 2019 out of spring training. And when you set our roster and you set our rotation, I told everybody, the interviews that I did and then the local stuff and during the broadcast, 2 out of every 5 days, the Barons are going to have a pretty big advantage. I thought that would be the best 1-2 combination, a righty and a lefty, both of them capable of winning 10 games, both of them capable of low 3 ERAs, if not even better. So that's the expectations that were put on by me. Not that anyone has to live up to my expectations, but that's how well they had pitched the previous year, and that's where the bar that they set. And once again, just like with Basabe, injuries have destroyed all of that. Lambert is got Tommy John. He's out for the year. There wasn't one outing this year where he looked the same, and no one knew. No one knew what he was going through. And then with Flores, he has had one or two of his moments, but nowhere near as consistent. And he has been pitching through a little minor this and a minor that. And then it was finally the dreaded oblique that has cost him. And I don't know, when you say he's starting to throw, which he is, but I don't know, more importantly, the expectations when he comes back. I would think he'll be limited, but there's no question that the Barons and the White Sox did not get out of Lambert and Flores what they had expected this year. Now, they were healthy, at least thought, coming into this year, which separates them from Kopech and Dunning and others. Okay. So that was a major, that to me was a major chunk. That's 40% of your rotation. That's probably better than anybody in the Southern League, at least as good as, but you couldn't use them. But let me give you a couple guys now. Kyle Kubot has already been promoted, and he's holding his own. But I tell you what, there are a couple guys coming out of the Barons' bullpen. Two guys that have really, really had solid, consistent years, and all you have to do is look at their ERAs. You don't have to look at me. Just look at Danny DePico from the right side with a very, very difficult to hit splitter. DePico coming on, he's going to be certainly. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a look and finishes the year in Charlotte. And then a little known lefty, Hunter Schreiber, that was picked up in a very, very small trade with Tampa prior to the year. And from the left side, he has also kept his ERA in the low twos, performed extremely well. Those two guys have done a very consistent job, very nice job. And I'll throw one more name the White Sox want to hear, and that's Cody Medeiros. And people who follow Medeiros and follow what's been going on, this was a highly, highly thought of number one pick by Milwaukee. The White Sox made the trade last year. It was Joaquin Soria going to Milwaukee for Medeiros. Medeiros last year and this year has had an awful time as a starter, an awful time finding his release point. And then about 2 to 3 weeks ago, the move was finally made to put him in the bullpen, where most thought his destination would be, and he has been nothing short. His numbers are phenomenal out of the bullpen. I think he's increased his velocity. More importantly, he's found his slider, which is his calling card, and that's been an important major, major turnaround within the season. He was winless as a starter, ERA 6, 7, 8. And then as a relief pitcher, he has really, really added to the bullpen. So you add Medeiros and Shriver and DePico to the bullpen. So now if we can get 2-3 times around the rotation, that's going to all add to wins. And that's basically how the team got to a very good start. It was 14-5 in the second half.
Let me ask you one more question, then we'll wrap it up. What do you make of Alec Hansen?
Ooh, man, I got to think about that one. Let me catch my breath there. I think, first of all, I want to start with a positive. Alec is a very likable guy, a very popular guy. He's a great teammate. I think with Alec, the physical part and the mental part is basically – comes down to one word, and that's confidence. And the confident one comes out of the bullpen, throws hard, and more importantly, throws strikes. The one that's not too sure, the one that gets hit a little bit, and the one that's just struggling with it himself, because only 2 years ago he led the minor leagues in strikeouts, and we thought this would be the next guy in line. After Season, after Kopech, and after Dunning, but it hasn't turned out that way. And he has had outings where he has flashed, and wow, that looks great, plus the size and a good teammate. But he's had other outings that have been a disaster, and usually those are the ones where he's behind early, 1-0, 2-0, can't catch up. When he does, the fastball flattens out, and it gets hit hard. I think the overall body of work is something that you keep in that system, and you work on it. I was with John Roush. Roush was a Birmingham Baron a long time ago. Roush was even taller and bigger. And now Roush at that stage, but again, was a little bit more polished. But the previous year when he was in A-ball, he was all over the place. So it doesn't mean that it can't, and that's why you don't give up on Alec, because if the command clicks and the confidence clicks, you're having a guy that you have in your system at 6'8" that you can't teach. And could possibly come in, I think, his best role right now, again, that Nate Jones type, middle to the back of the bullpen, that gets you four very important outs leading to your closer. That's what he eventually could do right now, not at that stage, not near that stage. Doesn't mean he can't get there.
All right. Well, this has been good. I know there's some guys down in Winston that I'm sure you're eager to get a chance to see, whether that may be, who knows when that'll be, Steele Walker. I know Cade McClure has been outstanding as well, so maybe those guys will make their way to you this year. If not, I would expect them to definitely start with you next season. But thanks for your time, man, and a lot of good players. We could talk about this all day, but I know we've talked quite a bit here, but I just want to thank you for your time.
Oh, you know what? Because of the rain out, it's been perfect. I've been looking for something to do. I'm charting my cats and dogs, and I'm just getting bored of looking at the walls here. But hey, thanks for having me. Anytime I can help, I'm available, and I look forward to it. Okay?
Absolutely, absolutely. We thank you so much. Thank you so much. That was Kurt Bloom, the voice of the Birmingham Barons on the Future Sox podcast.